Indeed, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and no better person to kind of help me go over things in relation to this very important day than Elaine Gross and Erase Racism, a regional civil rights organization based right here on Long Island, and exposes and addresses the devastating impact of historical and ongoing structural racism. As we say, a very good morning on this historic day to Elaine. Elaine, thank you so much. Happy New Year, by the way, to you, and thanks for joining us here.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, and I'm glad to be with you.
You know, I was reminiscing to myself last night. I wanted to get you on. I appreciate kind of the last-minute insertion here, but, you know, I wanted to kind of talk to you because MLK Jr. would have been, I believe, 91 today. And I'm just wondering, Elaine, what he would have to say about this nation's contentious, racial landscape. I was just wondering if today he were alive, what would he have thought? And I'm wondering what you think if that was the case.
Well, I think he would have been disheartened and angry at the same time that we have an increased return of the white nationalists and hate mongering, that we have that not only by just ordinary people, but we have that by the highest office in the land. And I don't know that he would have seen that coming, so to speak. I also think he would be asking all of us, it's great that you remember the victories so far, but what have you done lately? And I think that let me explain both of those statements. I'll start with the latter. At Erase Racism, we are so focused on trying to motivate and engage the public to understand the seriousness of a variety of civil rights rollbacks. And sometimes it is frustrating because there don't seem to be enough voices coming out in favor of, so to speak. We have just this past week, HUD dropped another bombshell. And I haven't had a chance to talk with you about this one yet, but HUD is responsible for enforcing the Fair Housing Act. And now they are taking even more steps not to do that. If you can believe it, they released a rule that doesn't talk about race. Which is the whole purpose of the Fair Housing Act was to, in response to the severe segregation of African Americans, and really saying, no, we cannot have this anymore. And so HUD produces a rule that says we're not going to call it affirmatively furthering fair housing. We're not going to have that mean to have anything to do with race. We're going to say that it's about affordable housing. And then in the rule, they don't even talk about the protected classes of the Fair Housing Act. The only portion of the rule that seems to touch on the protected classes, and of course race is a major one, race, ethnicity, religion, et cetera. They talk about impediments to this fair housing choice, new language that they're using, and they have nothing to do with fair housing, nothing to do with race. And they have made it essentially fine for local governments not to address the severe segregation and not to try to support integration, racial integration in housing, which is what the Fair Housing Act was all about, the affirmatively furthering provision. And so, yes, Dr. King would be appalled that our local government, that our national government has turned its back on something that was a major victory for the civil rights movement, the passage of the 1968 Fair Housing Act, and has, in this sort of bold-faced way, basically said, you don't have to do this. And if the federal government says you don't have to do that, and there are people who are providing loads of justification for why people of color should be treated differently, should not have their rights. We are in a very serious time, and Dr. King would be amazed that there weren't more people up in arms over these major changes.
We're talking with Elaine Gross, of course, of Race Racism. You know, with that bombshell, I'm just hoping, Elaine, that it doesn't affect what we have all been through in the last couple of months with the Newsday investigation, Long Island Divided, and the three-year investigation really revealing some devastating stuff regarding discrimination in the housing market. And you only hope that it does not hamper what's going on right now with these investigations. And somehow, some way, you know, you wonder why HUD has dropped the ball in such an egregious manner here.
I mean, if the rule goes into effect, it definitely will hamper our efforts and other efforts to make a difference. The good thing that I can say that's come out of the Newsday investigation is that the New York State Senate, for example, several committees of the New York State Senate arranged for a public hearing here on Long Island, and they, you know, by all appearances, they are very serious about this, and they are looking at pieces of legislation. As a matter of fact, there's draft legislation. I just saw an email yesterday, haven't had a chance to look at it, but there are multiple links to various pieces of legislation that they're working on to try to make change at the state level. And I think this is going to be the message of hope, is while the federal government is rolling back, and we are fighting them on that every step of the way, you know, you at least slow them down, the state can step forward. And at least in the instance of what real estate agents are doing, I think they can make very real, very concrete changes in the enforcement. The thing that's troubling about HUD is, as you know from previous conversations we've had, one of the really serious pieces of discrimination is not visible to the uneducated. They have no idea. Ordinary residents, ordinary citizens, they don't know that the local municipalities are responsible for furthering fair housing. People don't necessarily understand that when a local government says, oh, we are only going to allow, we have a preference for people who already live in our community, and so therefore we have a housing policy that says if you live in the community, then you have access to this affordable housing, which is devastating, especially if it's an all-white community, if it's a mostly wealthy community, so you don't have people who are income eligible who are black in that community because there's such a small number of them. Those kinds of things will keep Long Island's severe segregation in place. And if the federal government says you don't have to do that. You don't have to be concerned about that, which is what this rule is doing. Then, the local municipalities won't do a thing. It's hard enough to get them to do it now when they're under obligation because there hasn't been strong enforcement around it. But now, it's really there's no motivation on the part of anyone to try to address issues of racial discrimination in housing, because this rule from HUD has taken away the language in its documents that specifically say that HUD and those receiving funding from HUD will take no action that is materially inconsistent with its obligation to affirmatively further fair housing. And that was such a strong mandate, and it allowed our sister organizations to bring lawsuits, and for us to bring lawsuits and some administrative complaints to help enforce this. And HUD is now saying that if a private entity finds discrimination, let's say through the courts, that doesn't matter. It's only if the federal government, the Department of Justice, HUD, it's only if they have a lawsuit that finds discrimination, then that has teeth as far as HUD is concerned in how they allocate money. And so, in other words, they're going to ignore violators of the Fair Housing Act if it's only been brought forward by a nonprofit organization like ourselves. They will ignore it. But if something is brought by HUD or the Department of Justice, then of course, you know what that means, because right now they're not going to bring anything forward. But it's only if they bring something forward does it matter. And this is, again, undermining a very central tenet. There's always been a private right of action for individuals, for institutions, and for them to turn that around and basically say, well, when we're measuring who we're going to give money to, we're going to ignore any private actions that have resulted in findings of discrimination. We're going to ignore those lawsuits. And if we want to give money to a municipality, we'll just go ahead and do it. And so it is a complex rule. It's a lengthy rule. We will be releasing comments on it soon, but it is so close to, it is so heavy on my heart today that we would be doing this at this time, and especially, right here around the Martin Luther King Day period. It is, I can't think of the words to express how disheartening it is that this is happening in this country. And a lot of people are seeing the white nationalists and the hatred that rise. These things don't happen accidentally. These things
are... Let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you something, Hud. So, I mean, we're talking about Elaine Gross, race racism. The HUD stuff is devastating. You know, you have to wonder here regarding Ben Carson, the HUD secretary. He's the current secretary, correct? He was nominated, of
correct,
course, by the president and approved by the Senate a couple of years ago. But you have to wonder about the overall mission of the department, you know, to increase home ownership, to support community development and increase access to affordable housing free from discrimination. I mean, this is the very mantra of what HUD is all about. And you just have to wonder the mindset, especially of a Ben Carson. And I've always questioned Ben Carson. That, you know, I happen to like him personally and everything else. You know, he's a great demeanor about himself. But you have to wonder about the overall process of his job if he is not aware of that mantra of supporting community development and increasing access to affordable housing free from discrimination. I don't know what is. So we have to keep an eye on that. It's a very important caveat. Elaine, let's get back to MLK for a second.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because, you know, on this day, again, a lot of meeting. We know, we spoke about in the beginning of the conversation, you know, about this contentious racial landscape that we are all in right now. But there's some positives. You know, you think about it, you know, from the negative side of things regarding the racial landscape, even to the positive, we saw, you know, an African-American serve two terms as a president, something Dr. King likely thought even his children probably would never see. Certainly in that regard, top levels of the cabinet, African-Americans have served Supreme Court, halls of Congress, state governors. You know, I go on and on and on. You know, even in New York, you know, we have the first black assembly speaker in Carl Hasty, Andrea Stewart Cousins, the first black Senate majority leader in 2019. Hakeem Jeffries, Elaine, in my opinion, a very strong candidate to become the first African-American speaker of the House sometime in the near future without question. So I am sure even on the positive side of things, that would be recognized in a very big way by Dr. King, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I think that we must keep in mind, as you are doing, those positive things that are happening. We have people signed up tomorrow. We have three different sessions, one at 8:30, one at 2:30, and one at 6:30. For a dialogue around taking action. And that's encouraging. Because, as I said, we do need more people to be willing to take action. It can't just be, what did erase racism say? You know, it has to be local people in their community taking action. And so I'm reminded of a quote that Dr. King made famous. It was when he was at the Riverside Church in 1967, and he had read something written by clergy and laymen concerned about Vietnam. But the quote was that a time comes when silence is betrayal. And I think you can think about that for any situation. A time comes when silence is betrayal. If you say nothing and do nothing, you are basically sending a message that you agree with what's going on. And that's why, you know, so many of us were in Mineola a couple of weeks ago now, at a march and vigil against anti-Semitism. We can't remain silent when we see whether it's the rise in hatred, whether it's our government doing the wrong thing, as is the case with HUD. We can't be silent in those instances. And so I think that's what Dr. Martin Luther King would want us to keep in mind for the day, on this day, as we are celebrating his life and his legacy. That would be the greatest. He would not be looking for the accolades, you know. The greatest accolade would be an affirmation that we're trying to continue on in his footsteps. Because we know that what he did was, I mean, what he did was always stepping forward, not being silent, even when there would be a lot of people around him who would disagree with him, he felt it was important, and he put his life on the line for that.
Without question, and I think also, Lane, I'll end it with this. I think he'd be pained somewhat by the fact that this country has yet to fully realize his dream of a time when, you know, I'm going to paraphrase here another one of his famous quotes, you know, when people would be judged solely by the content of their character and not on the color of their skin. All in all, I think he'd be pained somewhat by it. Listen, we'll keep an eye on things as far as the statement. That is a bombshell regarding HUD. And that's hard to believe, but it is true with all that's happening and everything else, especially here locally. Hopefully investigations will reveal many, and we will certainly be on top of everything here. Can't thank you enough on a very important day, Elaine Gross. Thanks so much, Elaine.
Thank you.